Have you ever been in the wilderness alone? I don't mean Tilden Park or even the wide trails of Point Reyes. I mean the kind of wilderness that surrounds you, envelops you, is wilder than you, is out of your control. Even as we long for it, wilderness cannot be domesticated or tamed, though we try. It can be awesome, but in order for it to be wilderness, there actually must be some danger. You know you're in the wilderness when you look around and you don't see anything quite so familiar anymore. And it's not clear which direction around may lead you home. The wilderness, each year, this is where we find Jesus as we walk further along this path of Lent. And it should come as little surprise that we find Jesus here. For this is where the people of God have consistently found the holy, at the edges, where the paths lead away from the known. Moses was there when he encountered the burning bush, and again when he received the commandments. Elijah came so close to the divine in the wilderness that he was able to know God not in the earthquake or in the fire or in the wind, but in the sheer silence of all that is. In the wilderness, there is little to distract you from what rises up in the still of the night. In the wilderness, you come face to face with all sorts of wild beasts, bidden and unbidden. Now, there are scores and scores of articles and commentaries written by scholars all debating if this temptation in the wilderness actually ever happened. Notice that in our text from Luke, there are no witnesses. But for me, the question of whether or not this literally happened in the manner depicted in our sacred text, this is just not very interesting. And I suppose that's because while I have never been spirited to the top of a mountain or been placed upon the peak of the temple, I have known all kinds of wilderness. I don't know that I could pick the tempter or the slanderer out of a lineup, but I do know what it is to be tested. I suppose that's why I don't find too much of a stretch of the imagination to see Jesus in the wilderness. Whether it's a physical wilderness or a wilderness of the mind or a wilderness of the soul, it comes to the same. For I know what it is to be in a kind of wilderness, to look around and to wonder where you are, who you are, who you are meant to be. At times in my life, I've been thrust there through no wish of my own because of a death or an illness, a misstep or a disappointment. And at times I've even chosen to enter the wilderness on my own. I suppose that even as I preach here today, I know that there are parts of me that are there right now. And I have the sense as I look around this room that I may not be alone. For centuries, the frame that we have used for this encounter has been the temptation in the desert. And while there is some truth to this understanding, I also wonder if this maybe sends us down an overly narrow path. Because the Greek word here for temptation is used in other parts of the gospel, and there it's actually translated as test. Think of a metallurgist testing a metal to see what it is made of. Or a teacher who isn't trying to fail their students, but is instead seeking to find out what they know. So I wonder if this encounter with Jesus in the wilderness isn't so much about temptation as if this were some trap to make him sin. Instead, this might be like a testing to see what he's made of, of who he understands himself to be. Whose he understands himself to be. If there is deception here, it's like Jesus is being subtly guided in a particular direction. Not one that is obviously evil. I mean, he could feed the hungry. He could rule the world with justice. He could be whole forevermore. Feeding the hungry, acting with justice, being whole, these are all good things. But if they are distractions from what Jesus has been born to do, what he was pulled from the River Jordan to do, then they must be surfaced and set aside. And this kind of work, it takes time. This is why I believe that the church has set aside this time of Lent, not for punishment or for shame, but so that we may, of our own free will, enter into the wilderness to learn again who and whose we are. And when we do this, reorient our lives in this self-giving, generative, sacrificial direction. Now, I really wish I could remember that. But I realize that I often forget. And this is also the case for the scholar Frederick Buechner, who wrote this in his book, The Hungering Dark. This truth means for us simply that we must be careful with our lives for Christ's sake, because it would seem that they are the only lives we are going to have in this puzzling and perilous world. And so they are very precious, and what we do with them matters enormously. Everybody knows that. We need no one to tell it to us. Yet in another way, perhaps we do always need to be told, because there is always the temptation to believe that we have all the time in the world, whereas the truth of it is that we do not. We have only a life, and the choice of how we are going to live it must be our own choice, not one that we let the world make for us. And so we come to the wilderness, and we do so allowing for, leaning towards, opening up ourselves to be tested. This is what those Lenten disciplines are all about, right? Now, red meat and alcohol and chocolate and Facebook, fasting from those is just fine. I may not get the chocolate one, but, you know, if you must. But in all of it, the intent is for us to take the time to remember, to allow ourselves to be tested so that we can learn again why we, each of us, has been wonderfully made by God, and then who we are to be. Not just to keep ourselves from pleasure, but to learn why we seek it out to begin with. In my experience, these choices that we face, these practices we attempt to follow, they are not as clear-cut as we might hope they would be. If it were simple, like night and day, well, it wouldn't be tempting. Like these tests of Jesus, tests to see what kind of Messiah he would be, over and over again, we encounter possibilities that seem to be pretty much equally good. So this is why I'm taking on a new Lenten discipline this year. I will be reading and meditating on Scripture. I will be engaging in acts of mercy, but there's a new one this year. For those who've heard me preach over this past 7 years, you know that something that I struggle with is how much I work. This, of course, is not unique to me, but it happens to reside in me. And over time, what I've noticed, the feedback from the family system, if you will, is that many days I find myself in the office far later than I intend, often well past dinner. Now, one thing that I have learned as a priest, and again, this is not unique to this vocation, but one thing that I have learned as a priest is that there is always more. The job is never done, and then it can never be done. I could always be preparing more for sermons. I could be reaching out more in pastoral care. I could be making more appointments with newcomers. I could be reading more so that my writing and my teaching have more breadth and depth, and on and on and on. Now, make no mistake, friends, these are all good things, and I really enjoy doing them. And I love my family. And I love them in a way like I love my God. But the rub is, I don't do it all the time in the ways that I have been called to love. For there are times when I allow my work, consciously and unconsciously, to be a screen or a shield. And I use it to hide from my responsibility, from what I have come to know as my God-giving calling as a father and as a husband. Again, my sense, friends, is that we are tested not with obvious and, you know, terrible choices, but with choices that over time, gradually, and almost imperceptibly lead away from where we are meant to be. And so one of my disciplines this Lent is to be home for dinner. Even if I will return later for an evening meeting, and if I have to be physically present elsewhere, I'm going to find a way to be part of the prayers and the conversation and the togetherness and the sacred space that our dinner is. If the tempter or the adversary is trying to get Jesus to be someone else, then I wonder who I'm trying to be. What idol am I working myself towards? Is work a stand-in for worth? What I do know is that all around me, all around us, are these choices, these other very admirable ways. And that when we enter the wilderness, one of our jobs is to stay, to remain there long enough, aware enough that we remember that we are God's and that we are enough. It is with this in mind that the Benedictine scholar and sage Esther Duval offers us this truth. She writes, "The silent courage, that perseverance, patience, suffering means first and foremost to accept myself, to know who I am, and not run away from myself along any of those numberless escape routes which always lie at hand." The silent courage to not run away. When I say it out loud, that one of my Lenten disciplines is to be home for dinner, I have to say that it doesn't sound quite as significant as it feels. And yet, if it were easy, I would have been able to do this long ago. Yes, it will be about remembering who I have been called to be. And it will also mean remaining in the wilderness to learn why I feel like I have to hide. Now, do I really want to go into the wilderness? Not really. It would be much easier, nicer, safer to stay on this side of civilization and not to leave the safety of the known. But within my soul, I know that those paths, they do not lead to Jerusalem, to the pain, or to the glory and joy. And so, as we begin this Lent, I wonder, what wilderness are you entering for this time set aside? What do you deny or refuse, even as it has been offered you by God. What has held you back, prevented you from seeing yourself as the Holy One does? We have arrived. Take heart, friends, for our path indeed leads us into the wilderness, but we do not walk it alone.